Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The United States incarcerates women at the highest rate in the world. Many are of reproductive age, and in 2017, an estimated 55,000 jail admissions involved pregnant women. Yet little is known about the health outcomes of their pregnancies. There's no requirement in Ohio to report miscarriages or stillbirths. In one case, Cuyahoga County jailers ignored a pregnant woman's constant screams for help, and she lost her baby at 17 weeks. We're joined now by two reporters who investigated that issue as a part of a series of stories on the Cuyahoga County Jail. Mark Puente is a reporter for the Marshall Project Cleveland, a nonprofit news organization focused on criminal justice. Welcome to All Sides, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Scott Knoll is with us, an investigative reporter with News 5 Cleveland. Welcome to All Sides, Scott.
Thanks, Amy. Great to be here.
So your stories focus on what's happening at the Cuyahoga County Jail, and as a part of your reporting, it centers on pregnant women who are incarcerated. I have to say, I was surprised to learn about the high number of jail admissions of pregnant women in the U.S., even though that number's from 2017. That's the best number we have. And then at the Cuyahoga County Jail, in a two-year period, there were at least 305 women who had known pregnancies. Mark, what kind of charges are sending these pregnant women to jail?
Well, we only examined the Acoff case. Hers was a low-level probation violation for not receiving mental health treatment. We don't have records on the other 300 women who were pregnant because of HIPAA. So if we get information like that, we'll definitely take a look at it. But we know Lynn Acoff was there for a probation violation.
Okay. And do you know anecdotally if they're non-violent offenders doing jail time while pregnant or anything like that?
We don't know the history of every one of the 300 women who were in there. Mm-hmm. We can assume they are based on just the rational of charges. But again, we don't know specifically.
OK. And Scott, can you tell me about the accommodations jails provide for pregnant women? What are they required to provide if a woman is pregnant?
The state really leaves a lot of that up to the jails themselves, from what we can tell. They are required to provide medical care. But exactly what that looks like can really depend on the county. Some counties have their own medical providers that the jail employs themselves. Others, like in Cuyahoga County here in Cleveland, they contract with the county hospital to provide medical care. So really, you know, as many different jails, as many different counties as there are, you can have all of those sorts of different options.
And Mark, your story mentions, we'll get into the story in just a second, but your story mentions that the woman that you profiled, she was in a pregnancy pod. Can you tell me about that? What does it mean to be in a pregnancy pod at the jail?
It's an area of the Cuyahoga County Jail where the jail houses pregnant inmates. During an interview last July, the sheriff had mentioned there was, quote unquote, they were sitting on eight of them. We don't know how many numbers in there they are in there. Cuyahoga County jail officials don't release information very quickly, and they don't release it in some cases at all. So we know there's a segregated area for female pregnant women. Other than that, we don't know much about it.
Okay. Do you know if that's standard? Do a lot of jails have pregnant-only areas, or that even call them pregnancy pods?
I don't know. We reached out to other county sheriffs to see if they would talk about this. Mm-hmm. None of them would talk, so we don't know the details on maternal care in all the jails in Ohio.
Okay. You start your story talking about Linda Acoff, who was nearly 5 months pregnant in January of 2024 when she began calling out in pain. Do you want to, Scott, do you want to pick up the story there for us? What happened to her whenever she was, you know, crying out in pain and asking for someone to help her?
At one point, we know she was taken to the hospital for some sort of treatment. She was then returned to the jail. She said she kind of had continuous issues, cramping and so forth throughout. A few days before she eventually lost that pregnancy, we know that she started to have speckles of blood you know, indicative of something being seriously wrong. She says that she went to corrections officers on that floor, asked for help. We do know from jail notes from the pod the day before that she was seen by a nurse. Video showed that that nurse examined her in her cell for less than 2 minutes. And eventually in her cell early on a morning, Linda Acuff lost that pregnancy, miscarried into the toilet in her cell.
Well, here is an audio clip from your interview with Linda Acuff. In the video that accompanies the series, she did not want her face shown on camera, so she's wearing a mask, and that does muffle her voice. Let's listen.
It's a very painful thing to think about. It's a traumatic experience. You don't receive the help that you need when I felt like they could have saved my baby.
Mark, why did she feel the need to wear a disguise or, like, cover her face whenever for the video part of this? She did let her name be used for your story.
She did. We first approached Linda. She didn't want to talk. We had a few conversations and why it was, and we thought it was important for her to talk about this. She felt that she didn't want to be stigmatized walking through the grocery store or the drugstore down the street if she's seen on a News 5 or other outlets that run the story and saying, hey, there's a lady that lost her pregnancy in the jail. So we agreed to accommodate her.
Okay. And here is Acuff's partner, Antoine Hare, saying that she shouldn't have been treated like that.
We're human beings, so we're supposed to get the proper medical care, no matter where we're at.
So you talked with both of them. You know, obviously, they were devastated to have lost their pregnancy. What did you learn about if she would have received more treatment? What, I mean, obviously we can't, you know exactly what would have happened, but Mark, you talked with some healthcare professionals. What did you learn should have been done, I guess?
One healthcare professional said that treatment is essential early intervention, that if Linda had been seen by proper medical care, it could have made a difference and possibly saved her pregnancy, but we don't know because the nurse failed to do her job responsibly. And subsequently, she was fired for an egregious performance failure pretty quickly after the pregnancy loss.
Yeah, two nurses ended up being reprimanded in the case. One was fired, the one who just gave her a pad and some Tylenol. Scott, that was the one who looked at her for only 2 minutes?
That was.
Do you know if the jail has any process for allowing a mother to grieve or have a burial or do anything with a miscarriage or a stillborn fetus?
What we know is in Linda Acuff's case, she was taken to the hospital. She was then discharged and allowed to go home. No sort of you have to go back to jail, anything like that, which I think kind of speaks to the lack of severity of her charges in the first place. This is somebody who was in jail because she violated the terms of her community control. By not completing court-ordered mental health treatment.
And a part of your story talks about how, you know, pregnancy outcomes, whether it's a live birth, a miscarriage, or a stillbirth, the jail's not required to report any of that. Mark, what do they have to report regarding a woman who's pregnant in jail?
They don't have to report really anything. They have to report that if you or I are in jail and we pass away in custody and we found records where county officials were debating whether or not this was a reportable incident, but the investigator summed it up in written format saying that the fetus wasn't incarcerated. It would not attract media attention. So therefore they did not report it. There's no way to know if the state of Ohio, the Bureau of Adult Detention, which monitor tracks all the deaths inside county jails, they have no idea how often this happens.
So they're required to report if someone dies in jail, but because they said that the fetus was not incarcerated, so therefore, they were not required to report it because it was not an inmate death. Is that what you mean?
Correct. It didn't rise to what the state calls a critical incident report because the fetus wasn't incarcerated. They determined there was no need to file a critical incident report with the state.
And Scott, you talked with doctors about this lack of reporting. What did they tell you about the idea that, you know, this doesn't have to be reported?
I think the simplest way is they feel it's ridiculous. We've had doctors, researchers tell us that there is no way to know whether or not women are in fact getting good care when they're pregnant in jails if no one is tracking those outcomes? You know, if beyond 20 weeks, if a child or if a fetus dies, that is reported to the State Department of Health, but all of that information is de-identified. So it will have the zip code in which that occurred, but it's not going to indicate whether it was a jail, whether it was a prison, whether it was a hospital, whether it was just an individual's house. So without having that information, and especially having all of that information in one place where researchers and doctors and people looking at this issue can get at it and really wrap their arms around it, there's no way for them to know exactly what's going on when it comes to pregnant women in jails.
Later in the show, we'll be speaking with a medical anthropologist who is also an OBGYN at Johns Hopkins. Her research focuses on pregnant women who are incarcerated. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about pregnant women behind bars with Marshall Project reporter Mark Puente and News 5 Cleveland reporter Scott Knoll. We did reach out to the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, and they provided information about what state law and administrative rules require. The rules say that pregnant inmates must receive appropriate and timely prenatal care, delivery, and postpartum care, as determined by the health authority. We also reached out to the Buckeye Sheriff's Association, but they were unable to provide a guest for today's show. So hearing that from the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, the rules say they must provide appropriate and timely prenatal care, delivery, and postpartum care. I'm guessing you would say in Linda Acoff's case they failed there. Have you found that they have failed in other areas, Mark?
Well, there have been many failures in the Cuyahoga County Jail in recent years for deaths for other individuals. Scott and I, another colleague, had a story in January where the state put the jail on a sanction because a individual collapsed on the floor for 10 minutes. He laid there. They didn't touch him. The first time they touched him was to handcuff him. He complained for days ahead of time of chest pains and shortness of breath. So there's a known history of medical failures in the Cuyahoga County Jail.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit more later. But in October of 2024, so this is 10 months after Linda Acoff loses her pregnancy, the Ohio Jail Advisory Board, they establish state jail standards and policies. They had a meeting and they briefly discuss requiring that pregnancy outcomes be reported as critical incidents. But that discussion ended without any movement. Scott, do you know what happened in that meeting? Can you tell us a little more about the Ohio Jail Advisory Board?
We really don't know a whole lot. Mark had the opportunity to talk to somebody that was in attendance. From what she described, it was basically kind of an afterthought at the end of the meeting, briefly discussed. No consensus was reached. Issue was tabled, moved right on. And the really surprising thing about that is that meeting happened just weeks after a GAO report, Government Accountability Office, at the federal level said they need more data on women's pregnancy outcomes in jails, that this is essential information to get to improve the healthcare for women in jails. And yet the state went, they looked at it, they briefly talked about it, didn't come to any sort of conclusion, moved right on.
Yeah, Mark, tell me, an Ohio Jail Advisory Board is not something I had ever heard of. Is this just a arm of the state that regulates jails? What is it?
It's a committee of public officials from the state level to the county level to the city level across Ohio that meet and convene quarterly to talk about conditions and rules inside jails. It's ran by the Bureau of Adult Detention and city, county, and statewide officials, and they discuss needs or whatever rule requirements or problems they're seeing in county jails.
Okay. So they did bring up the issue, but then did nothing about it, basically. Is that the bottom line?
That's correct.
So there is also an Ohio Pregnancy Associated Mortality Review Committee, which what led to its creation? It was created back in 2010. And what does it do?
Scott, you'd be more versed in that since you talked to Michael.
Yeah, it basically looks at data from the state to try to improve pregnancy outcomes, both infant and maternal mortality issues. And we did talk to a doctor who is a member of that, and he said emphatically that it is impossible to draw any sort of conclusions without this data. There is no way to know if women in a particular county jail are having issues, or whether this is a systemic issue through jails all across Ohio without that data and without access to that data. And this is something he can't even get access to because it's not collected. Without that information, there's just no way of knowing. And no way then, if you don't look for a problem, you're not going to find a problem. If you don't find a problem, you don't have to fix a problem.
Yeah, when you know, as a woman who was pregnant, whenever you have a pregnancy, your pregnancy has to be monitored. You have a series of doctor's appointments that happen at certain weeks, and there's certain checks to do. So we really don't know whether those are happening for women who are in jail or not. Is that the bottom line, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know whether or not those checks are happening, but we don't even know what the outcomes are.
Mm-hmm. That is News 5 Cleveland reporter Scott Knoll and also Marshall Project reporter Mark Puente. They are both staying with us. Coming up, we're going to talk to an Ohio lawmaker who's advocating for change when it comes to pregnant women in Ohio jails. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about maternal health care when it comes to pregnant women behind bars in Ohio. There's currently no requirement that jails report pregnancy outcomes as far as miscarriages or stillbirths. The lack of data leaves questions with little to no answers, and one state lawmaker is hoping to change that. Still with us is Mark Puente, a reporter for the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization that focuses on criminal justice. Also still with us is Scott Knoll, an investigative reporter with News 5 Cleveland. I want to start this segment with Democratic State Representative Terrence Upchurch, who represents the Cleveland area. He's also the president of the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus. We spoke to him last week about this issue. Welcome to All Sides, Representative Upchurch.
Hi, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So when did you first learn that miscarriages and stillbirths are not reported to the state or tracked in any way?
Well, this was actually brought to my attention a couple of weeks ago due to an incident that happened at the Cuyahoga County Jail in downtown Cleveland. And, you know, I had no idea that there was no criteria to report these pregnancy outcomes. And that's what inspired me to address this situation legislatively.
And now you're hoping, you haven't proposed legislation yet, but you're working on it. What are you hoping to be able to propose?
Well, yeah, that's correct. There hasn't been any legislation introduced as of yet. As of right now, I'm working with the Legislative Service Commission, who does the bill drafting on what the language would actually look like. And I'm also having some conversations with my colleagues in the majority. I would like for this to be addressed legislatively in a bipartisan fashion, because I think that there would be bipartisan support to promote healthy pregnancies and healthy outcomes. So it's my hope that, one, we would protect pregnant mothers in the state of Ohio, whether they are in jail or not, and two, we will have a way to keep track of what the outcomes are for women who are pregnant while they, if they should happen to be in one of our jail facilities.
Now, you mentioned the woman in Cuyahoga County Jail who lost a pregnancy at just before 20 weeks. It was ruled a stillbirth, but one jail official said it didn't need to be reported because the fetus of the inmate, the fetus that the inmate was carrying, was not incarcerated. So therefore, they're basically saying the fetus is not incarcerated. The investigator working on this, Paul Marich, in January 2024, wrote in an email, "While this is a tragic event, the state guideline indicates that it must be an inmate for reporting." So what is your response to that? That the reason they didn't need to make any report about this lost pregnancy was because the fetus is not an inmate?
It's just unacceptable. And I refuse to accept that. You know, I understand what may be policy and procedure, but we're going to address that legislatively so that moving forward, whether the as the investigator put it, the fetus is incarcerated or not, there has to be a report made. I just reject that.
Mm-hmm. What does a timetable look like? You know, I've never prepared a piece of legislation. I don't know what it's like getting something to the floor.
Sure. Well, listen, it's my hope that once I find a joint sponsor, that we can get the bill introduced, and that it moves quickly through the legislature. It's my hope that we can get this done before the end of 2025. As you all know, I'm in my last term. This is my last General Assembly. So the sooner that we can get this on the governor's desk, the better.
Are you hopeful? I mean, I'm sure you floated this idea around over the past couple of weeks. Are you hopeful that there's are there some Republicans who have the majority? Are they likely to join you?
You know, I'm optimistic based upon my conversations. I do think that there is an appetite to address this. It's just a matter of where this falls on the priority list of the majority. I'd imagine because we're talking about protecting pregnant women, that it should be a high priority as soon as possible and get the bill introduced and allow it to move through the committee process and get it onto the floor and over to the Senate.
Now, there also is an Ohio Jail Advisory Board. Does it have authority to make this reporting requirement mandatory? The article from the Marshall Project says that the board met in 2024 but decided to take no action on this issue. Is that why you think the legislature needs to step in, because the Ohio Jail Advisory Board didn't take action?
Yes. And part of what I'd like to accomplish in the bill is making sure that this commission is solely responsible for, you know, getting the reports and making sure that they collect the data so that we can prevent these sorts of outcomes from happening in the future. And listen, it's my hope that this commission will work closely with me on this legislation, because, I mean, I would imagine that this should be a priority for them as well.
That's what I was going to ask, if the legislature can make the Ohio Jail Advisory Board take action, or I'm not really sure if there is just legislation, probably from your perspective, that's what you can do.
Yeah, in our legislation, we can make this commission have responsibility to take action.
Mm-hmm. OK, this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Democratic State Representative Terrence Upchurch. He's planning to introduce legislation related to tracking pregnancy outcomes of inmates in Ohio jails. Now, why do you think people tend to be dismissive of the needs of people behind bars in general? I mean, perhaps, you know, pregnant women more specifically because of this case. But do you feel that people tend to be dismissive of their needs when it comes even to health care?
Oh, of course. A negative output towards people that are incarcerated. But let's be very clear here. Their punishment is relinquishing their freedom for a certain period of time for whatever they've done. They're paying their debt. That does not mean that we as a society should treat them inhumanely, especially if they're pregnant women. Because, you know, the unborn child should not bear any of the punishment or responsibility for whatever the situation may be with the mother at the time. And all pregnant women deserve the proper care while they're pregnant, whether they are in jail or not in jail. We have to look at ourselves as a society and decide, are we going to treat people humanely, whether they are in jail or not, or are we going to allow these things to continue?
Yeah, I would like to think that, you know, I being pregnant, which is already hard under the best circumstances, would be very traumatic for a mother and baby while incarcerated. And I wouldn't think that this kind of reporting, this would give... would be just an indication of the quality of maternal health care in Ohio jails, you know, especially as the numbers run higher than normal of the number of, you know, pregnant women in jail.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you're also the president of the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus, and it's well documented that birth incomes for Black women in general are worse than for white women. Would it then follow that do you think the same is true for Black women behind bars?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's no secret that Ohio is at the top nationwide in terms of infant mortality, specifically for babies of color. And I believe that addressing this issue legislatively is another step that the legislature can take to reduce those numbers and promote healthy pregnancy outcomes.
And across the U.S., black women are imprisoned at twice the rate of white women. Some of the issues that lead to poor pregnancy outcomes in the general population, you know, poverty, substance use disorders, a history of trauma, limited access to health care. What about those same issues for women who are incarcerated?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think these issues, I think, lead to the incarceration rates that we're seeing, particularly amongst women of color, right? And I think that you know, this is a symptom of a bigger issue, which is what you outlined: joblessness, poverty, lack of quality health care, lack of quality education. I think all of these things combined, you know, certainly would have an impact on whether or not that an individual can end up in prison.
That was Democratic State Representative Terrence Upchurch, who represents the Cleveland area. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course, it's a pleasure, and thanks for having me.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about pregnancy outcomes for women in Ohio jails. We just spoke with State Representative Terrence Upchurch. And still with us is journalist Mark Puente of the Marshall Project Cleveland and investigative reporter Scott Nolm of News 5 Cleveland. I want to bring them back into the conversation. Mark or Scott, can one of you give us a sense of the Cuyahoga County Jail, what it's like? Another Marshall Project story that I read looked at conditions of jails in a handful of cities, including Cleveland. And specifically, it describes inmates of this jail being in mostly darkness, not much sunlight. Can you talk about that? What are the conditions like at the Cuyahoga County Jail?
I toured the building in, I believe it was early 2020. Came about 2 years after the U.S. Marshals report called conditions inside the jail, quote, inhumane. It is an older building. It is very, you know, what you think of when you think of a jail that was built in the 1970s. A lot of concrete, a lot of, you know, very brutalist architecture to it, vertical building. So it's not something that has a lot of room for people there to spread out, to get away from each other. You know, narrow slits for windows with minimal light. And that has been something that the state has cited the county for time and time again in its inspections, because the way that building is built, it just can't meet some of the current standards for jails.
I wanted to touch on another aspect of your reporting that doesn't pertain to pregnant women, but does relate to the overall operation of the Cuyahoga County Jail. You spent a year looking at deaths at the jail. 24 people have died in the jail's custody in the past 6 years. Mark, were there any common threads you found related to the deaths in the jail?
The lack of medical care, the lack of proper training, lack of certifications for jailers and medical staff. That seems to be the reemergent theme that goes back years to the U.S. Marshals report in 2018.
Now, you mentioned this earlier. There's the case of Glenn Williams Jr., 39, he collapsed in January of 2024 while in custody. The video is very disturbing because he collapsed and other inmates are sent back to their cells, but jailers don't really respond to him quickly. They don't start CPR for 9 minutes. And Williams's aunt has been seeking answers. The family didn't even know that he was in jail. Mark, what else have you learned about that case of Glenn Williams?
Well, it happened within 48 hours of Linda Acuff's pregnancy loss that Mr. Williams collapsed in a pod in a common area. He laid on the floor. Jailers walked around the pod, shooing individuals back into their cells. They laid there and looked at him. They called for medical personnel. It took about 10 minutes to show up, but the first time that a jailer touched him wasn't to check a heart rate, check a pulse, see if he was breathing. They put handcuffs on him when he was already been laying on the floor for 10 minutes. And what we found in state records is that the state sanctioned the jail for not answering this man's calls for help. He complained for days prior to about heart, chest conditions, chest pain, shortness of breath. So in that sanction, it was just they had to go back and recertify the employees or retrain them on when individuals complained about medical procedures.
Now, Scott, what did you learn from, you know, the union and employees at the jail basically saying that they're not trained medical professionals? That's not their job. Where is the line drawn between what an employee of the jail is supposed to do versus just calling? Basically, it's like calling 911. They like push a button for help, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what the corrections officers union rep told us. They are trained, and in their policy, they are to press a button alerting other people that there is an emergency happening in their unit. No requirement that they provide CPR. They are trained in CPR, but according to the union, there's not even a whole lot of guidance as far as when to use that, how to use it, particularly in a jail setting. And keep in mind, this isn't just inmates that they're responding to. This could be a coworker, it could be a staff member, a maintenance employee, a whole lot of people. That's almost like a little city. So a lot of people are coming and going through that facility in the course of a day. And those people, your corrections officers, a lot of times are your first frontline responders when an emergency happens. Again, whether that's an inmate or whether it's just somebody off the streets who's in there to work and provide a service and hopes to go home at the end of the day. So something that really can affect thousands of people in the course of a day.
And Mark, another case you highlighted was Fred Maynard. He died at the jail 5 months before the Williams case. Fred was a double amputee. Can you tell me what happened there?
He was being checked in. He hadn't been to a cell yet. He was in the receiving area. He choked on a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. There was minimal attention paid to him. The medical experts we spoke to said they did try the Heimlich maneuver, but they kept him sitting. It was kind of hard to do it with his condition of being a double amputee. Another medical professional said that they should have tried extracting the object from his mouth, but by them compressing air down, it just lodged it further. The state didn't sanction the county jail on that one, but it is a tragic event.
After these deaths, the state placed Cuyahoga County on a corrective plan. Can you tell me about that corrective action plan, Scott? What is it?
Basically, it's not to minimize it, but it's the equivalent of a traffic citation. You get written up, your deficiencies are pointed out. It's then up to the jail to say, this is what we're going to do differently the next time. That's what the jail did. That's what the state signed off on. And no further sanctions were had. As Mark mentioned, it was basically, well, we're going to retrain our employees. We're going to make sure everybody knows that when somebody's expressing chest pain, that it's taken seriously, that they're seen by a medical professional. You know, and then everybody kind of gets a pat on the back and sent on their way.
And Mark, getting information from jail officials wasn't easy. Tell us what Ohio law requires when it comes to public information that they must provide, or talk about some of the obstacles you encountered trying to do this reporting.
Well, Ohio law is clear. Government bodies are supposed to turn over documents in a timely manner. The key word is timely. In this case, we fought for a year to get records, and we're still fighting for records. Cuyahoga County government is abysmal in providing timely records. That's factual. We've gotten response after response where they send the wrong records. They wait months to respond. I've never seen a government in this arena be so deficient in providing public information when they're caring for thousands of people inside a jail or policing on the street.
And did you talk with any officials like Cuyahoga County, the chief executive or anything like that, to try to, you know, lean into finding information in a different way, like going around the jail?
Well, I did, and I called the county executive, and he called my boss to complain that I'm too tough on him. Well, sorry, you got a job to do, and the public demands records, and we're not going to go away. As we've shown, we're not going to go away, and we're going to keep requesting records. But again, they're the keeper of information, and it's quite alarming that the government is so slow to turn over the records.
The county executive did pledge in his campaign for office for more transparency. Have you seen any change?
What I've seen from my seat is less transparency. There's been no change.
Now, Scott, is the Cuyahoga County Jail an outlier? Did you learn anything about other jails in your investigation?
Whether or not it's an outlier is kind of, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Going back again to the 2018 Marshall's review, the U.S. Marshal for the Northern District of Ohio said that His review team called this one of the worst facilities they had ever seen any place in the country in their careers. There have no doubt been incremental steps. There have been changes. Things are improving in there, but you still see patterns, like when it comes to jail deaths, as well as some issues with corrections officers themselves, kind of re-emerging. And maybe a lot of the big things have been fixed, some of the, more traumatic issues, if you will, but there's still a whole lot of things that need to be triaged in there and changes that need to happen to make sure that when somebody goes to jail, they're able to go and appear before a judge and eventually have their case adjudicated. And they're able to then walk out one way or the other from this facility. Keep in mind that a lot of these people are pretrial detainees. They haven't been convicted of anything that they're in there for at this point. A lot of them simply don't have the money to post bail to get out of jail before their trials.
And Mark, what has the response been like to your series? I guess besides hearing from the county executive telling your boss you were being too hard on him, what other responses have you heard, Mark?
We've heard people that laws need to change, and until we see something in writing, people are outraged. We talked to some county council members after, but they don't have the power to change a state law. So we're waiting for Representative Upchurch to see what he can come up with, and we'll keep reporting it as we move forward.
Okay. And are you, I mean, are you hopeful that Representative Upchurch's bill will gain some traction and maybe make some changes?
Well, we don't set the agenda, but we're going to follow the agenda and see where it takes us.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both for your time. That was Mark Puente, of the Marshall Project Cleveland, and investigative reporter Scott Knoll of News 5 Cleveland. Mark, Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk with a Johns Hopkins professor and an OBGYN. She has researched the topic of pregnant women who are incarcerated and wrote a book about it. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. The United States incarcerates women at the highest rate in the world. Many are of reproductive age, and thousands are incarcerated in jails and prisons while pregnant. Solid data on pregnancy and pregnancy outcomes has been hard to come by nationally, which raises questions about the overall health of and healthcare options for pregnant women who are behind bars. Dr. Carolyn Suffren has made it her mission to account for these women. A medical anthropologist and OBGYN at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Dr. Suffren has worked extensively on reproductive health issues affecting incarcerated women, from providing clinical care in jail to research to advising on policy. She's also the author of the book Jail Care: Finding the Safety Net for Women Behind Bars. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Suffren.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
Now, it can be hard to put a firm number on the women who are pregnant and incarcerated. Your pregnancy and prison statistics study launched in 2016, and it was the first comprehensive assessment of women who are pregnant or give birth while incarcerated. What did it show?
So in that study, we collected data mostly from prison systems, from 22 state prison systems, all federal prisons, and then a handful of jails across the US, including the five largest jails. And we collected pregnancy data for 1 year from these facilities to try to understand just how many pregnant women are entering our nation's prisons and jails, and what happens to those pregnancies. And I think the most striking finding of that study was really that they exist. Before that study, there really was no information that systematically documented the number of pregnant incarcerated women. But more specifically, what we found in that study was that in just those 22 state prisons and all federal prisons, there were over 1,000 admissions of pregnant women to those state prisons, and there were over 800 pregnancies that ended in those prisons. Most of them ended in live births, close to 800. And so when you think about that number, that's a lot of women, a lot of mothers, and a lot of children who are affected by incarceration.
Now, do you know overall of those women that you studied, do you know what they were in prison for? Is there like a certain like, or is it just run the gamut of offenses?
It was everything. And that was not what our study was designed to collect data about. We had no idea what people were in for. Mm-hmm. However, we can extrapolate what we know about women in general in the United States who are enmeshed in our country's criminal legal system. The vast majority of incarcerated women are there for nonviolent charges. Now, anyone who's incarcerated has a constitutional legal right to health care and deserves health care. So I don't mean to say that some people are more deserving than others. But the reason why I bring that up is because for women especially, and parenting women and pregnant women, most of the reasons why they're in custody relate to many other factors upstream that have much more to do with things that relate to being disadvantaged in society as a woman, oftentimes a woman of color, or having inadequate access to mental health care, substance use treatment, or being in abusive relationships. These are all factors which I and my colleagues, as folks who studied social determinants of health, we think of these as health issues, but oftentimes these are the same things that funnel certain women into our criminal legal system.
Now, has the data been difficult to continue to collect? Was this a one-off study, or have you been able to continue collecting information?
This was unfortunately a one-off study. Our funding was limited to this one-time collection, and our team was not able to continue the data collection. Now, we did hope that by encouraging the participating prisons and jails to create their own internal systems for reporting them to our study database, we hoped that that got the momentum going for them to continue collecting these data for their own facilities. But to my knowledge, none of these facilities has made any such data public. And I'm not aware one way or the other if they're continuing on an internal basis to collect these.
Now, you've been quoted in saying that providing data about pregnancy outcomes is essential. What is lost when there is no information known?
Well, when we don't know how many pregnant women there are behind bars and what happens to those pregnancies, then it makes it very easy for policymakers, for providers in these prisons and jails, and for society to believe that they don't exist. And when we believe they don't exist, then we don't invest in the healthcare and other resources that they need in order to ensure healthy outcomes, in order to ensure that they have access to full scope pregnancy and postpartum care.
Now, Ohio does not require that stillbirths or miscarriages be reported. Is Ohio an outlier in not requiring that information, or do other states require reporting on miscarriages?
To my knowledge, there are no state laws that require institutions of incarceration to report pregnancy outcomes data. Now, just a few weeks ago, the U.S. Department of Justice, Bureau of Justice Statistics, did publish a one-time report where they collected 1 year's worth of data from state prisons and federal prisons about pregnancy outcomes data in custody. That report included miscarriages, it included stillbirths, but it was not something that was necessarily mandated by state law. It was through a congressional requirement that the Bureau of Justice Statistics report this. So Ohio is not an outlier in not requiring reporting of miscarriages and stillbirths that occur in prisons and jails. However, Ohio, like most states, does require reporting of stillbirths greater than 20 weeks in any setting to the Registry of Vital Statistics. So there is a workflow and a pathway by which stillbirths are reported to the state, but there is no way in which that is designated as having occurred to a person who was in custody. And that is not unique to Ohio.
Yeah, the reporter for the Marshall Project basically said that it just gives the zip code where the stillbirth happened, but it could have been anywhere, in a hospital, in the prison, in a jail, or it could have been at home. You know, you just don't know.
Exactly. There's no way to designate and to catalog how often these adverse outcomes are happening in prison and jail settings.
Now, the number of women who are pregnant is higher when we're talking about jails versus prisons. Why is that?
That is most likely the case, although I do want to put the caveat that although our Pregnancy in Prison Statistics Project did estimate nearly 55,000 admissions of pregnant women to jails each year and about 2,000 to 3,000 to prisons, we don't have any systematic data about jails. Mm-hmm. Our number was just an extrapolation based on the handful of large jails that we studied. But understanding that, proportionality does make sense because jails are short-term facilities. People, when they get arrested, they go to jail. And most people who are there are pre-trial. Some people will never get sentenced and never go to prison. And so it's not surprising to think about the fact that there are more pregnant women who are in our nation's jails and coming out of our nation's jails as well, as opposed to prison, just because of the frequent flux between jails and the community.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Dr. Carolyn Suffren, who researches pregnant women who are incarcerated. As a medical resident, you were called to treat a pregnant inmate about to deliver. How did that experience lead you to focus on health outcomes of pregnant women who are incarcerated?
Well, in that experience, when I was called to the particular delivery room, the woman was shackled to the bed. And nothing in my medical training had prepared me for that possibility. It was completely outside of the realm of my imagination. And I was so worried in that moment. I was so distressed, not as much as the woman herself, I'm sure. I worried what would happen if there was an emergency and we needed to do an emergency C-section, or if there were other emergency things that happened during the delivery. And would I be able to safely facilitate this birth? Would I be able to ask the officer to remove the shackles? It just opened up this whole Pandora's box for me of not only what to do in that moment, but why as a society are we incarcerating women who are giving birth and who are pregnant? And then it made me think about why are we incarcerating mothers and parents and all kinds of people who have connections to children in the community and the disruptions that happen in those communities when their mothers and parents become incarcerated.
Now, you know, the criminal justice system might say that just because someone's pregnant or a mother doesn't mean that they didn't commit the crime, right? So there is an instance whenever we will end up with pregnant women or a mother in jail.
Well, I think what we've seen in some states is that there are actually alternatives to that assumption. First of all, most people in jail who are in jail are pretrial and haven't been convicted of anything. And we've seen in some jurisdictions, Cook County in Chicago, for instance, has a policy of not incarcerating pregnant women who are in their third trimester in certain cases, as long as they meet certain criteria. The state of Minnesota has passed the Healthy Start Act, which diverts pregnant sentenced women, so women who have been convicted, that diverts them away from incarceration to community-based alternatives. And so policies and practices like that recognize that most people are not threats to public safety. And while they may be involved in the criminal justice system for a variety of reasons, there might be alternatives to how we think about managing those charges and things that they may have been involved in.
Some of the issues that lead to poor pregnancy outcomes in the general population are poverty and substance abuse disorder, history of trauma. What about those same issues for women who are incarcerated? Is it the same issues that impact the general population when it comes to poor pregnancy outcomes?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up because thinking about the risk of poor pregnancy outcomes and overall maternal and infant mortality in this population is something that we really have been overlooking and need to further address. Because yes, pregnant women who are incarcerated, before they are incarcerated, their lives are impacted by a number of, as I referred to earlier, adverse social and structural determinants of health, such as the ones you mentioned. And so when they come into incarceration, they already have numerous risk factors for adverse pregnancy outcomes. In addition to high rates of substance use disorder, up to 70% of incarcerated women have a substance use issue. They also have high rates of mental health conditions. Up to 70% of incarcerated women have a mental health diagnosis. And they also have high rates of chronic medical conditions. The leading causes of maternal mortality in the United States are mental health conditions. So when you think about this population of incarcerated pregnant women that already has a high prevalence of these high-risk conditions, it should really give us pause and make us think about their risk of maternal mortality, even once they leave prison or jail. And then you add to that the trauma of incarceration, the variable access to healthcare that they have while they're in custody, and the trauma of giving birth while you're in custody. And all of these things compound to potentially increase the risk of adverse pregnancy outcomes for this population.
That's Dr. Carolyn Suffren, a medical anthropologist and OBGYN, as well as an associate professor at Johns Hopkins University. She's the author of the book Jail Care: Finding the Safety Net for Women Behind Bars. Thank you for your time today, Dr. Suffren.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.